This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Hi, and welcome to Radioactive Magazine. My name is Kristen Chow, and today in the studio we have members of Citizens for Justice in the Middle East. To my left is Barbara LeClaire, and we also have Noor Higley. So welcome today.
Thanks for having
us. Glad to be here.
So let's just get started and tell us a little bit about the organization.
You know, even before we do that, could I put in something else? I was really happy to be listening this morning at 9 to Law and Disorder, and they were talking about the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide in the Middle East, and it was really informative and touching, and I'd just like to put my little commemoration of that 100th anniversary, which will be this Friday, of the Armenian Genocide, and how many comparisons we can make what is happening to Palestine compared to what happened in the Armenians, except theirs was very immediate within a couple of years, and this is all drawn out over at least 67 years, we would say, and longer.
Sure. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the history of the group. How long has the group been around?
CJME got started in, let's see, when did we start bombing Iraq? I guess it was 2003, March of 2003. There were a lot of peace demonstrations around town out in Johnson County on 119th Street, and especially on the plaza there at the Horse Fountain. And a lot of us kind of found each other at that time. And in particular, there was a retired Presbyterian minister and his wife that were out there kind of tabling with some information about the war and how unwise it probably was. And they had a lot of experience with the Palestinian situation, too, in their background, and a lot of people gravitated towards that, and CJME just started coming together then in 2003, so very informal meetings, which is still what we pretty much have.
And so what has it been doing since then in the community?
Well, I guess our goal is primarily to educate the population and then to try to get them to act in their best interest. We have had, over the years, any number of speakers and conferences here in the city. There are a lot of organizations worldwide, and especially here in the United States, working on the Palestinian problem from different sides. The churches are working on it, some of the mosques, and there's all kinds of organizations, kind of special interest. And we've had speakers from a lot of those over the years that have gotten quite a bit of recognition. And me and Noor will probably want to talk about what we've done just in February of this year when we brought a very interesting speaker in.
Okay. And I want to go back to that education component because I think that's important about why we're here today. But I do want to get your response, Noor, on how you got involved.
So I learned about CJME last year during the First Friday event in the Crossroads. And personally, my father is Palestinian, so is my mom. He was forced to leave when he was 16 years old. There was an Israeli tank shooting at my grandparents' house. And when they left, the family lost everything. And ever since then, you know, was kind of attached to the issue from an ethnocentric point of view because, oh, I'm Palestinian because I'm, you know, my parents are from there. And I, as an American that grew up in Jordan, I saw children that were my age mastering the slingshot and throwing rocks at tanks. When I went to the U.S. to study as an 18-year-old, I got to see different people of color and faiths speak about the issue from a human rights perspective, and that's how I reattached myself to it from that point of view, because it is wrong to be treated that way whether you're Palestinian or not, and I shouldn't be pro-Palestinian just because my parents are from there. But generally speaking, that's how I got involved.
Okay, so the core issue that the group addresses is the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, correct?
Correct.
And so for me, and I'll admit that I don't know a lot about the issue, and it's a complicated issue. It appears to be complicated based on the news coverage that it gets here and you know, the stigma that a lot of people get when they criticize anything, the U.S.'s relationship with Israel. And so let's sort of like deconstruct that and mm-hmm. talk about, you know, some basics and some history on the issue.
So the mainstream media tries to portray the conflict as that of a religious war between Jews and Muslims. In reality, it's more of a conflict that's based around economics and people in power profiting over people who are not in power, and that's the case with Israelis and the Palestinians. It's oftentimes that media does the mistake of comparing both as if they're equal powers, and they're not. The main reason, you know, you'd be usually attacked that you're anti-Semitic if you criticize Israel around here, more than even so in Europe or in the UK, where actual occupation was actually created by them. But, you know, the whole anti-Semitic argument is that Arabs are Semitic to begin with, and they're not self-haters. And the other part of it is that, you know, if I come to your house and tell you, I do not want to be your neighbor, I want to replace you, and I have a gun to your head, that's going to be the main reason why you're going to hate the other person, regardless of the color of their skin, hair, or they're green, brown, or whatever color they are. And so that's the main reason why there is hatred in the region. It's not because of the European, traditional European, like, well, I wouldn't say traditional, but historical European anti-Semitic issues that we hear about.
So this goes back, what, some 40, 50 years or more?
More.
And so the origins of it, let's talk a little bit about that.
I'd like to throw in a little bit about that. Actually, it rarely is talked about what was going on in Palestine in the 19th century, in the 1800s. But a lot of Europeans started coming in around the 1830s and 1840s when a lot of interest was developing in the United States and in Europe in archaeology, which was just becoming a modern science. And they were finding all sorts of fantastic things, ancient Troy and what is now Turkey and all, and they wanted to go to the Holy Land for biblical reasons, to see what they could find to prove or disprove the Bible, more or less. And a lot of particularly German and British archaeologists and missionary types and educators went into the Holy Land and Lebanon at that time, started setting up a lot of institutions to improve everything from the roadways to health, setting up hospitals, and doing a lot of this archaeological work for learning and just improving the lives of everyone they found there. By the mid-19th century, the population was about 3% old Jewish communities that had been there just forever, about 15 to 20%, depending on who you talk to, Christians in Palestine, and the rest, the large majority, Muslim. And these communities generally lived separately in their own villages or neighborhoods in larger towns, but cooperated. There was not friction. Everything went pretty well, considering they were within the confines of the Ottoman Empire, and it was the empire that was their enemy, not each other at that time. But the idea of Zionism, which is more or less the idea of a Jewish state being established in the Holy Land, started percolating in the 1890s and grew quite slowly the first couple of decades. But by the 1920s, at the end of World War I, quite a few European Jews were coming in. Now, these were not Jews that were descendants of the ancient Hebrews and Israelites that had lived in the land, but descendants of Europeans that had converted to Judaism over the many centuries, so they look like Europeans. And the Israelis that are there now are still, the large majority of them are descendants of these European Jews that are there. And one of the interesting things I caught before when Noor was saying this isn't really a war about religion, interesting, of the Israeli Jews that are in the Holy Land, 85% of them consider themselves secular Jews. In other words, are not religious Jews at all. So they are certainly not there for what we normally consider religious reasons.
And so, like I said, for me, it seems like a complicated issue. And probably for most people in the United States, they feel that way. So let's talk about why Americans should, you know, care about what's going on, you know, what seems like a world away.
I would just like to say that most people find it as a complicated issue, but it's really very simple. You know, the apartheid system in South Africa was considered a very controversial issue in the past, but it was as clear as it's a human rights issue. But to answer your question, how it relates to Americans here, it's not a conflict that's been going on forever that we have nothing to do with over here. It's our tax funding that's mostly supplying the military, the Israeli defense systems over there, and that are continuing the military occupation that's happening on a daily basis for Palestinians. We're sending about an average $8 million a day, and over the course of ever since we've, according to the U.S. Army War College, an economist there, Thomas Stauffer, it's cost America about $3 trillion. And this was a figure taken in 2003, and it could be higher right now. So $1 trillion, that's with 12 zeros. We could be spending that money here, rebuilding the U.S., and honestly, it always puts the U.S. in direct opposition to international law. It's a way of, for me personally, I the way I see it, the way that, you know, I just feel that we should have our voice considered in the democratic process. So it's usually the pro-Israeli lobbies that are making those decisions of how much money we're sending over and how it's going to be spent over the military, not even civil society. If it was Israeli civil society, I would say, no, let's keep giving it to them. But it's not. It's actually funding, you know, military activities that are killing, targeting more than 50% of children when the operations take place. So. And it's usually an issue that we don't even get to debate here. It's decisions that are made on our behalf in private lobbies. And I think the power should be with the people, not with the lobbies.
Why do you think there is so much pushback whenever this issue comes up and anyone criticizes the current U.S. policy with Israel?
Well, I think for the longest time, we have heard the story, of course, of the Holocaust during World War II. And in fact, that story is told continuously on so many broadcasts and in the print media to the exclusion of the rest of the horrors of World War II. Not that the Holocaust wasn't worthy of a lot of focus, but all the focus. And just or in the years since, so much concern has been voiced and is genuinely felt by the American people for the Jewish people and the suffering they've undergone, that we want to see them as innocent in every way, sort of, which of course is unrealistic and they don't claim that either. But we're so sympathetic to them. It's been ingrained in us for so long, for so many decades. Each generation of kids and all are taught this, and to the exclusion of so many other tragedies and things going on. So
what I'm hearing is that it's a human rights issue that's going on over there, and that's why people should care. How is that playing out with CJME's role in the Kansas City community? Have you had conversations with people, and if so, how do those generally play out?
Well, we wish we'd had more conversations. We're trying to draw more people into our group and to attend our meetings or any kind of speakers or whatever that we sponsor or bring to town. We would really like more participation from the Jewish community. Not all the Jewish community in Kansas City sees this the same way by any means, but the rabbis in general, the leadership of the Jewish community seems to be pretty solidly behind Israel, right or wrong, I might say. Now, not exactly, but very sympathetic to anything that is troubling Israel, and to the exclusion of concern for others again. And we don't draw very much participation over the years from the Jewish community. We've had some members, not enough, and we really would like to open up discussion with the Jewish community here in Kansas City about all this. But very frankly, I think so much of what the Israelis are doing and have been doing for so long is defenseless that it's hard for them to come and talk to us about it.
And we are trying to build the long-term response to what's going on there, not just when, like last year, in the summer of last year, over 5,000 children were victims of the whole assault in Gaza. And yes, we've organized a protest and we've, got some media coverage for that, but that's not enough. We want to keep talking to residents of Kansas City, and not just when blood hits the streets, it's also when, this has been going on for over than 65 years. Not just the killings, but even like the day-to-day life of a Palestinian, like a child would have to see their parents lie at the at the wall, checkpoints, because, you know, their parents are trying to get to work and they're trying to make up excuses just to make sure they can feed their family that night. And children should not be normalized to see their parents lie for the sake of making a livelihood. Those little tiny things add up, and those are the type of things that, you know, we can't really imagine here, because all we hear is that when one Israeli soldier gets killed, that's all over the news. But it's when there, you know, more than 5,000 children, Palestinian children, are killed, then you barely hear about that. So so we're trying to not just educate, but also take action. But we also recognize that you cannot take action without the first step of learning what's really happening. And most people do, even if they're from the, you know, some extremist groups that are usually anti-Palestinian. Once they really learn or hear the Palestinian perspective, often shift over and become more sympathetic to a more just solution.
Right. I think I read on your website that you have worked with Israeli peace advocates and have started building those relationships. How do you go about breaking those walls down, though? Because I would imagine it's such a difficult thing to do, and it's such a difficult conversation to have, considering, you know, all the coverage over here tends to be pro-Israel.
I want to point out one thing. A lot of the biggest, shall we call them, Palestinian-Israeli peace organizations here in the United States that are worked to resolve all this are headed by or have a lot of staff that are Jewish that are very, very valuable, such organizations as the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation, and all of many of them, are their leadership is Jewish. So we have a lot of good participation on the national level. A lot of good Jewish writers write about this, too.
And Jewish Voice for Peace is another great organization that's, you know, very much focused on trying to find a good solution between both.
Mm-hmm. It's just here locally, we can't get much Jewish participation, I guess. Not yet, anyway.
Right.
But to answer your question also about how do we break the walls, I think it's a mixture of both, like, facts of what's really happening on the ground, getting those facts out. The more we get them out, the more people are really susceptible to start listening in some more. And sometimes it's a mixture of sharing your personal story of how you got involved in the whole issue and why you think it's important. And that's, I think those are the two main ways that we're, you know, making sure more people, that we're talking, that we're really talking, that we're not just you know, having presentations that are just one-way conversation streams, and where it's more of a dialogue.
So tell us some specifics on what you have been doing in terms of research here, outreach in the Kansas City community.
Well, the last thing we did, this was in February, we there's a national organization, If Americans Knew, and it is devoted to, yeah, just spreading the word, the truth, and the full story about this whole situation that has existed all of these decades. And they assisted us in putting up a big billboard downtown. What was the, do you by any chance recall exactly what it said? I think it said something like $8 million a day to Israel. And then what was the punchline on that? Anyway, it educated people. We would hope that $8 million was being of their money was being spent every day or sent every day for the use of this pretty wealthy small country there that could well take care of itself if really pushed to do so. And it was meant to provoke thoughts about why we are being this generous, on and on and on. This figure that Noor gave before, what was it again? How many trillion dollars?
$3 trillion.
Yeah. This is just an unbelievable amount of money being spent for the welfare of just a few, what is about 6 million people in the state of Israel now.
Yeah.
And many wealthy Israelis are also U.S. citizens and are very wealthy here at home and just kind of go there. Well, it's kind of a long story, but, you know, they could do so much more to provide for themselves that they don't need to if we are doing it for them.
Yeah, well, just to add to that, the aid that they do receive is more than that of the sub-Saharan African countries and all of the countries of Latin America and the Caribbean combined. So, I mean, if we were to not argue that we don't want to spend that money here, let's at least spread it out to other countries that really need it.
Right. So ideally, what would CJME and other groups that work for the Palestinian cause that are working to bring awareness to it, what would you see the U.S. foreign policy with Israel look like?
Put more pressure on stopping the illegal settlements, that are spreading throughout the West Bank and Gaza, well, West Bank mostly, and ending the occupation, the military occupation, because we cannot be equals on the table when we say we're negotiating between Israelis and Palestinians and the U.S. is in the picture. We cannot say that we're equally negotiating when you have a gun to my head. That's not really negotiation. That's still military occupation. So that's the first big step that needs to happen before we start discussing a peaceful solution. But I personally am all for a one-state solution with equal laws for everyone, just the way they were before 1948 when people of all faith were living together without any issues. Like, I knew that Jewish grandmothers would babysit Palestinian babies, and it was not seen as a taboo at that time, but now it's almost impossible to think of it that way.
Right. We hear a lot about the two-state solution. What is your take on that?
Well, of the what we call the Holy Land on all of our maps, this West Bank that was envisioned by many to be the Palestinian state is only 20% of the land, and then there's this little Gaza on the side that would be 2%. So theoretically, maybe 22% of the land was to go to the Palestinians in this two-state solution. However, so much of the West Bank has been gobbled up by Israeli Jewish-only settlements that the amount of the land is being diminished. And it's ongoing every day. It's a bigger and bigger problem. There are more than twice as many Palestinians as there are Israeli Jews. And this would be such an unfair split to start with that it would be kind of ridiculous. But it's just getting more and more lopsided as the days go by. So it's sort of clear that the Israeli government really never intends to settle this in any sort of a reasonable two-state way. So we're wondering what's next.
It's also impossible physically to have a two-state solution. The West Bank right now looks like a piece of cheese that has a lot of holes, and those holes are the expanding settlements. So it's physically not intact as a piece of land to call a one state,
Right.
A viable Palestinian state for that matter.
Right. So I'll full disclosure, some of the activism that I do here in Kansas City has revolved around Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And when the Ferguson uprising first started, there was some tweets exchanged back and forth, mm-hmm, between the people of Ferguson and the Palestinian people,
yes,
and which I thought was very, very powerful. Can you kind of talk about that transnational solidarity that took place?
Absolutely. So when Michael Brown was shot down, the whole systemic racism that, we face here is pretty much similar to the racial profiling that Palestinians face as well. So while Mike Brown was shot dead, we had neighborhoods flattened to the ground in Gaza. But it's the St. Louis Police Department, for example, were trained in Israel by the Israeli military to practice their techniques. And that's when we say our police here is militarized. It's pretty much the same system that's used in Israel to control the demographic spillover, as Bibi Netanyahu would say. But generally speaking, yes, it's the same form of oppression. So when, for example, Trayvon Martin was shot down as well, George Zimmerman said that, he looked like a threat to me, like his hoodie was there. And so the same argument is made against Palestinians that, everything that the U.S. and Israel does in that territory is for Israel's security, because Palestinians in themselves are a threat and perceived as so. But in reality, every Palestinian, not just because I am from there, really do love life and are not terrorists and come across the way that we're portrayed in the media. So,
right. I think some of the tweets that I saw were regarding the tear gas that was used, and apparently it was the same tear gas being used in Ferguson as that used in Palestine,
mm-hmm,
which is very interesting commentary, I think, on the relationship there there's between the two countries.
A lot of cooperation in developing the most high-tech things to use against people. A good number of the members of CJME, including, for instance, myself, 3 years ago, I was the last time I was there, going into the West Bank to some of the villages when they attempt to do demonstrations, all demonstrations. I think all gatherings of more than 10 people outside, I think, has been illegal in the West Bank for decades now. So demonstrations are forbidden. So when they are attempted, the Israelis close in on them. And we've experienced a lot of these tactics up close and personal. And it's really, really very frightening.
There have been some private security firms that have profited off of the wall that, you know, has been, or, you know, the relationship between the U.S. and Mexico and that security discussion there, and the same thing in Ferguson and in Palestine as well. I think it's G4S is a private security firm that's been making, you know, tons of money.
Yeah, a lot of things.
Unfortunately, that way.
A lot of that same oppression being linked. So we have about 4 minutes left. What are some things that you want people in Kansas City to take away from this conversation?
I've been dying to say our group is made of people of all sorts of different political philosophies and economic philosophies, party memberships. I consider myself a libertarian, have for many years. The decent people in any of these political takes on this have to take a careful look at this. This is not a Democrat issue or a progressive issue or whatever it might be. This is an issue for all of us, and everybody, I think, would arrive at the same conclusion once they're educated about what really has been going on there in their name and with their money all these years.
Yeah, and if people want to learn more, they can go to our website, sayjme.org. We have a lot of links to how you can get hooked into taking action or not, or learning, just simply learning more about the situation or talking to someone about it.
Do you all have any upcoming events that you'd like to talk about?
We currently have our First Friday events, so every First Friday we'll be having a wall event, and it has information about the conflict and about our organization and a sign-up sheet. If you want to join us, then you can do so over there.
You said a wall event.
So, yes, so it's to talk about the separation wall, the apartheid wall, or what people call the security wall on the Israeli side. But we do have a hypothetical wall up there that has information on there as well.
Yeah, so for people that go to a First Friday, May the 1st, the weather's going to be great, I guarantee it. So look for us out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any other last parting words?
I might say, again, a couple of months ago when we had our last speakers here in town and had that billboard up, if Americans knew, let's see, the website is www.ifamericansknew.org. Yes, and they are tremendous, the information that anybody is interested in this that would like to go take a look at their stuff. It's terrific.
And the most effective means of taking action has been the boycott, divestment, and sanctions, the BDS movement, as they call it here. They also we have more information on that on our website as to how those movements have been successful around the world. So,
can you expand a little bit on that?
Sure. So the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement has, for example, there's been boycott of this SodaStream ad that Scarlett Johansson had made, and it's an Israeli company. And so some of them are on the cultural level. Some of them are, like, if there are particular artists going to perform in Israel, then, you know, you'd have publicity against having that artist go there.
Okay. We have a couple more minutes, actually. I want to thank you guys for coming on today and really, you know, sort of breaking down what I perceive as a complex issue. But as you said, it's a humanitarian issue, and there are human rights violations going on, and with taxpayer dollars involved. With that, thank you for coming on. And you said there's a website, cjme.org.
Correct.
Is there a Facebook page as well? Or?
We do have a Facebook page, and I think it's linked on the website as well.
Okay. Well, thank you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
And again, this is Kristen Chow with Radioactive Magazine, and thank you for tuning in today.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our community. If you'd like more information or like to comment on this program, call Bill Claus at 816-994-7869.